I'm calling the meeting to order. Health and Human Service Finance Committee on March 13th. We do have some conference committees going on, so we don't have a full house. We don't have enough to actually move or pass a bill at this point, but I think we will because we do have folks that have traveled to speak today, and guest speakers. We're going to go ahead, and I think Representative Fisher will start with you. Oh. Well, that's all right. We'll start with Representative Fisher on House File 524. And then I think we'll follow with Representative Mack's bill next. And we can't move the bill, so if you would just start presenting, and as soon as we get two more bodies in the room here, we'll interrupt you and move your bill.
Sounds great, Chair. Thank you, Chair, Committee. I appreciate the opportunity to present House File 524. What this bill does is address some of the issues that we have had over times of the lower needs 10% rate reduction that we've had in the past. This has caused some hardships as people have been trying to care for individuals in settings that we have out there. And what we're trying to do is I've got an amendment that's going to go to it. Originally, we were going to try to cast a broad net to address all lower needs, but we were finding that the fiscal note was quite high. So initially, the amendment that I have that will be going on is going to narrow it to initially starting those with mental health illnesses because we're finding now that with the rates that had been established out there that it's just not working. The services aren't able to be there, and as a result, we're not having the outcomes that we'd like to have. I do have several testifiers, and I'd like to call them up at this point in time.
That would be fine. And if your testifiers would come to the table and read their name in the record before they begin testifying.
Hello, I'm Julie Bogenholm, and my agency is Safe Transitions. I serve adults with mental illness in adult foster care settings. We were hit quite significantly with the 10% cut. One-third of our clients received the cut. We believe that was disproportionate, and it seems that our folks with mental illness didn't screen properly on the screening tool, and they didn't have ADL needs, which was one of the reasons why they didn't screen and they qualified for the 10% cut. Also, they didn't have significant outbursts or significant behaviors, but they do need the foster care level of care. None of them have gone anywhere. I believe that the push behind the 10% cut was to possibly push them out into independent settings. They haven't left our facilities. We've had to absorb the cut. We've had to decrease their services significantly, starting with staffing hours. We've had to reduce their staffing, their supports. And when one person in a home of four is cut, not only their staffing is affected, it affects the entire home. So we have three other people that live in a home with someone who had a cut. Their staffing is also reduced as staffing is shared. They all are people with serious and persistent mental illness. They're extremely vulnerable people. They need our support to be safe and healthy. They're people with delusional thoughts and behaviors, people who are motivated to harm themselves, and also folks who seek drugs and alcohol. We've also had to cut some of the quality of our program. We used to provide crisis intervention training to all of our staff to help reduce the strain on the system, train our staff how to deal with crisis, how to avoid crisis. We've cut that from our program. It's a very expensive training program for our staff. Also, staffing consistency is so important for people with mental illness, and our turnover has increased significantly. We haven't given pay raises since the cut. Also, our clients don't have the outings and activities that they had previously. And for people with mental illness, getting out and about, very important to them. Behavior incentives is very important. We've had to make some serious cuts to those programs.
thank you very much for your testimony. And I think what we're going to do right now is we do have a quorum. So first I'm going to just pause for a moment and make an announcement that there is no meeting tomorrow. This time is being given to the Health and Human Service Policy Committee for their hearings to make their deadline. So we will not be meeting tomorrow. And also that we have no minutes. We didn't have any yesterday either, so we're going to have to play catch-up. So just wanted that for the record. We haven't forgotten to do them. We just don't have them. Staff hasn't caught up with our work. So with that, Representative Fisher, would you like to move your...
Yes, I would like to move my House File 524.
To be
laid over for the omnibus. And then also, if I could, I'd also like to move my A1 amendment to House File 524 to get it in the shape I'd like, please.
Thank you. Representative Fisher has moved the A1 amendment to his House File 524. Is there any discussion, or would you like to touch on what that amendment is?
Basically, what the amendment does is, because of the large fiscal note on the initial bill that we were looking at, what we're trying to do is step it in and make it a little bit more affordable to start with, and hopes that in future years we can come back and address the other populations of the disabilities that this has been hitting. But we need to start somewhere, and this is where we're starting right now.
Wonderful. Does anyone have any questions about the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Sorry, passes. A little premature on my tap there. Okay, so the bill is now in the form. I think the author would like it, and I believe you have a couple other testifiers.
Yes.
So, Ms.
Chair, members of the committee, Sue Abderholden, NAMI, Minnesota. As you may remember, this was a way to kind of, you know, save some money in the budget by reducing the payments to the providers by 10% for people who had low needs. Unfortunately, we never really came up with a really good way to figure out what low needs means. It's I think, some ways easier when you look at someone with a physical disability and say, well, they can't bring the fork to the spoon to their mouth, so clearly they need additional help there. It's far less easy to say someone who has serious depression and cannot get out of bed, cannot buy groceries, and can't make their meals, to say, you know, that they're low needs when neither one will eat without help. I think also that some of the behaviors that were looked at were behaviors that you may see in someone who has a developmental disability, but not in someone who has a mental illness. And so the 10% cut actually disproportionately hurt people who live with a serious mental illness and are in these corporate foster care settings. I think it's unfortunate that we weren't able to come up with a tool that truly assesses low needs, but we didn't, and this really has hurt the mental health community quite a bit. So I would certainly urge your support for the bill.
Thank you very much. Does anyone have any questions? Thank you for your testimony. We have Bruce Nelson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I am Bruce Nelson with ARM. We represent providers in both areas affected by, at least initially in the bill, in developmental disabilities and in the CADI waiver. We found it curious, and Ms. Abderholden spoke to a lot of our points, that and it's a good example of the inability to assess people, that we actually found folks who in a previous bill a couple years earlier who were identified as high need and were cut ended up on the same list as low need. I think I give credit to the department. They tried their best, but there really isn't a tool to assess people who have low needs. So people with developmental disabilities as well as people with mental illness were affected. The reason I bring up developmental disabilities, the narrowing amendment, you know, looks at MI, and we fully support that. But it's also important to note that people in the developmental disability waiver, about half of them have at least a secondary diagnosis of mental illness, and that can be demonstrated by about half of them are on psychotropic medications. And so as you move this forward, Madam Chair, and the chair, and you and others are putting together your bill, I hope you can give consideration to developmental disabilities for the reasons I mentioned, as well as mental illness.
Thank you. I have a question. I don't know if anyone else does, but you might be thinking of them here for any of the testifiers. Mr. Nelson, if you could just address a little bit this issue that you pointed out about people that had been assessed as high need and now being assessed as low need, speaking to the need for doing something different with our assessment. How does the state, in tough budgetary times or in times where we want to make certain that we're giving the right services to the right people, how are we to be assured that we do that if none of the assessments are reliable?
Madam Chair, it's my belief that it's really problematic in moving forward with so many of the initiatives. We do need to identify and have a good assessment tool to find there are people who are overserved in corporate foster care. Who are they? And then what's the capacity around the state to where we need corporate foster care, and what are the other options for people? It's all contingent on an assessment tool. Madam Chair, you're carrying a bill that'll be heard, hopefully two bills, be heard on Friday about payment methodologies and redoing how we spend well over $1 billion in the waivers and DT&Hs and ILS. And in order to really figure out how the money is allocated correctly to people to meet individual needs, ultimately we need a valid assessment tool. It's valid and reliable. And we simply don't have that right now.
Well, and perhaps that's a discussion for a different day. And I think, you know, hopefully department members that are here will be thinking about that too, and we can take that up at another hearing. But thank you for that answer. And any other members have questions on to the wonderful Representative McDonald?
Thank you, Representative Norton. To the testifier or to?
Not to me, Representative McDonald.
Not you, no.
To the testifier or to Representative Fisher.
Thank you. Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. On the fiscal note on page 2 of 4, under the assumptions, number 2, I'm just looking at but it says all individuals, regardless of whether they have mental health needs, will qualify to have their rates restored if they are served by the eligible provider. Now, in Ms. Aberholden's testimony, there was a... I'm being interrupted by our good fiscal analyst, Doug Burke, who said the amendment will...
Narrows
it down to that eligibility. Well, thank you. Then I'll ask my next question.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Aberholden, could you come down? Just a question for you. And because of the rate reductions that the legislature enacted 2 years ago, and its sole purpose is to ensure that the residents can remain in their homes and not be institutionalized or in nursing homes, which is a good thing. We all know that. For those people that have HCBS, how many in the last 2 years were removed from their homes, perhaps their foster adult homes, and institutionalized or in nursing homes because of the cuts?
Ms. Abderholm.
Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, I don't have that data with me. I can go back and find out. We do know that there were some providers who stopped providing corporate foster care because of this, because they couldn't make it work. And I can, you know, go back and get that information for you. I don't want it to be anecdotal, so I'd like to get some more concrete information.
Representative McDonald, did you have a follow-up?
Madam Chair, thank you. Yes, so, Ms. Aberholden, you are saying there are known cases, and you have the numbers back at your office or something, that indicates that some providers stopped serving because of low health needs or low-level needs, serving that group of population.
Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, yes, we do know that some homes stopped operating. I may not be able to find out exactly where those folks went, but, you know, hopefully the providers can tell me that. I think, you know, one of the problems with the way that this kind of worked out is that the providers were cut, and then the service plans didn't necessarily change, although they got less money. And so then the individuals couldn't actually even appeal because it wasn't a cut to their services, it was a cut to the payment. So it got really more complicated than you probably want to know. But it really did create a lot of problems in the way that this was put together.
So Ms. Abderholden, what I'm hearing you saying is that perhaps they found another service provider that was willing to accept the lower rate, or are out on their own, you just don't know at this point.
But I will
McDonald,
do my best to find out.
Was that good enough, or did you have more?
Madam Chair, that's sufficient from Ms. Aberholden. Representative Fisher, then perhaps, you know, of course, you're aware that the last 2 years ago we had a $6 billion deficit, so some reductions had to be made. The 10% cut in the CADI and the DD waiver was necessary, at least we thought so. So I think it would be important to your bill and or to gain some support from me or my side to have testimony or witness to perhaps what those reductions in those waivers and the effect that it had, therefore causing a problem, bringing forth that problem and realizing that this is the solution. At least for me as a vote, one vote on this on my end, for my constituents, that would be helpful.
Representative Fisher.
And so if I'm understanding you right, you'd like to hear more testimony from people who have actually been either losing services or losing where they're being housed from actual people who've been in that situation, Representative McDonald?
Representative McDonald?
Madam Chair, thank you. Yes, because when we sat in the committee when the proposal was put forth in this committee 2 years ago, we had ample testimony to that testified that what this would do, this 10% rate reduction. And it was a tough decision. You know, these are folks that need help. It was a very tough decision on our chairman and this committee. And I'd like to see, well, all those who testified saying this is going to be very tough. I want to hear how tough was it. Give me actual testimony as to what effects it had, this 10% reduction in the CADI and the DD waivers.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative McDonald. If I'm understanding, then I can work with Sue and some of the other people to find people to come in and testify. If I'm understanding you right, you're asking for me to bring in more testimony. I don't have them readily available right now. I do recognize that the legislature was in a very tough situation 2 years ago, or excuse me, 2 years ago with the huge deficit, and you know, a possibility came up to try to address it, and you know, people thought it was going to work, and we're seeing now that may not have panned out as the way it was, and so that's why we're kind of circling back around. But from our testimony, we can see what we can come up with and come back at a future time if the committee is willing to schedule that.
Representative Fisher, I think we do want to lay this bill over, and
right.
So what I would suggest is that perhaps you could we could encourage providers who live in Representative McDonald and maybe some of the other committee members' areas to call. I know I've had the opportunity to visit those affected in my area, and so you know, I know services in order to accommodate some of the people that they did keep in, services were cut, and service what they were able to provide was affected everyone that lived in those facilities, not just the one who was the low need. So I think different places probably managed it in different ways, but perhaps and if you have providers in your own district, you could make some calls this next week to this bill. It will be part of the, or at least considered for part of the omnibus bill, so we will have an opportunity to talk about it again. But I think we do want to vote on it today. And Representative Zerwas has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, just a comment. As I was out and visited some homes in my district, and one of the things that they talked about was what one of the testifiers had mentioned earlier about the screening tool and how it difficult it is to discern some of the mental illness components of it, to figure out whether someone is a low need or high need. They say, you know, a feeding tube or something, it's pretty easy to discern. But if you have a client that has mental illness and will follow the one staff person around because they're having thoughts or hearing voices and keep asking the same question about why they can't leave, they say, you know, it's one thing to help someone that's wheelchair bound, get them situated, then be able to do the rest of the stuff that needs to be done in the home to care for the residents. But if you have someone that's much more high need, maybe not medically, but certainly of the staff's time. And so I think that's one of the impacts that they were seeing. And with the 10% cut, they had, like, kind of like you had mentioned, they'd cut out day trips, they'd cut out other things to be able to cash flow, basically.
Thank you for that input. I don't see any other questions, so Representative Fisher, would you like to?
I would like to renew my motion for House File 524 as amended to be laid over for inclusion of the omnibus bill.
Thank you very much. No. Excuse me. Thank you very much for your bringing this bill forward and for your testifiers as well. And so, Representative Mack, would you like to step forward, and we'd like to hear your bill. Schmitz. So we have House File 404, and Representative Mack, would you like to move that?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 404 for recommendation to pass or inclusion in the omnibus bill. I'm not quite sure which one.
Yes, to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
That is my motion, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, and you can proceed.
Okay. Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. I am here to present this bill, something that I have been in discussion with the fellow next to me, Kelly Harder, who's no stranger to the committee, and who I have the great fortune of having work on behalf of Dakota County on many of the issues that affect this committee and the decisions we make. And what is in front of you is a proposal that would enhance the policy discussion around what we fund and what we should and can expect to get in return for taxpayer dollars. What we're hoping to do through this bill is develop a nonpartisan methodology to show what the return on our tax dollar investment is in the area of health and human services and corrections. This bill would direct and fund a study by MMB to look at national models that have done this and come back with recommendations if this would be a sound direction for Minnesota to go in the future. So with that, Kelly Harder can speak to some more details and some of the benefits that could come out of this proposal. And members, it's getting handed out, should have some handouts that he will be referencing. Oh, and Madam Chair, I have a oral amendment for the bill. Just need to change a date on line 1.18. It is referenced as November 30th, 2014, and I'd like to change that to 2013.
Okay, members, we're changing on line an oral amendment to change line 1.18 to delete 2014 and insert 2013. All those in favor? Any discussion about that? Oh, Representative Dean.
Madam Chair, would that be considered a technical amendment, or did that meet the 24-hour rule?
Madam Chair.
Yes, this committee, the committee chair has said that oral amendments are acceptable, and so we're going to be kinder to Representative Mack than one of her colleagues.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think he met his one question quota for this.
So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. So thank you, Representative Mack, for that change. And now we have, yes, and the amendment is adopted. Let's just say that formally for the record. And then, Mr. Harder, would you like to continue?
Sure. Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Kelly Harder. And I'm here on behalf of Micah and also Maxa. And in my day job, I'm the Community Services Director in Dakota County. Thank you for allowing us and Representative Mack for carrying this bill. If we take a step back from all of the work that you all do here for many hours and long hours, and ultimately it leads to a lot of, rarely is there a debate of the importance of the issues that come before all of you. But we all know that there's finite resources. And I had one great commissioner when I was in Dakota County say, there will never be enough money for all of the great ideas and that which people deserve in the great state of Minnesota. But how is there a way by which we can add value to the policy discussion that we have in this state in a nonpartisan way that can help contribute to what goes on here, but also goes on at the county level and in government and also at the city level? Whenever we're investing a tax dollar, how are we assured that this is the most impactful way not to in any way, shape, or form degrade or compromise the value of other programs as well? But we know there's only finite resources. In front of you is a handout, Public Policy Institute out in the state of Washington. They started this back quite a few years ago where they had the same question. And the legislature initially invested some dollars into, and it's an educational and academic institution that does this. And it's a nonpartisan academic institution. And if you would, it creates the black box. This is not for a social service institute or a corrections or education. These are like the applied economics folks who really don't have a vested interest which way the outcome goes. I would point to you the one handout that has kind of a purple banner on the top. And this is just one example of the potential that could be, that you all have folks in front of you requesting funding. We're requesting and presenting to you the great outcomes that will come from doing this and deserving people that would receive the benefit from it. This allows, if you look at, for example, on page 4, it has juvenile justice programs and adult criminal justice programs. In effect, this takes the programs that are being funded in the state and it runs what are the benefits, what are the costs to the taxpayer, non-taxpayer costs, and ultimately it does come to a formulary that shows whether or not there is a return on this investment. And even to be considered for a program to be run through what I call the black box, it has to have already met rigor of best practice, other institutional evaluation that's been validated. So we also want to be fair to say not every program is going to fit, nor should it be held. How would we ever innovate and create that which we've never done before if it has to meet all this rigor? So somehow we would find that balance. We're not suggesting it is the only solution. On the backside, once again, there's examples in children's mental health, general prevention. I can tell you that in our county, I've shared this with our corrections juvenile side, and we went right down this line because at Dakota, I too have finite resources, and we put a lot of money in our purchase of service and programming, and we looked at this, and in fact, we were doing some programs on here. We do quite a few of these, actually, which I'm proud of our staff for having already identified and implemented. But there are certain things where we've looked at and said, from a budget standpoint, we're going to cease doing certain things and reinvest more resources on those higher return on investment impact program areas.
And Mr. Harder, can you clarify for us that this is a Washington State, it says Washington State Institute for Public Policy by the Washington State Legislature, and these are estimates for Washington State. They may or may not be reflective of anything that happens here in Minnesota, so we shouldn't look at the numbers and evaluate our own programming necessarily.
Correct, Madam Chair, and I think thank that's you. A very valid, important point to make. This is merely an example of what this legislation ultimately, if a recommendation is to move forward, think of you're sitting at your chairs and having this value add. And what is key to this from our perspective, and I know for all of you at the end of the session you have all these bills for consideration in the omnibus bill and you get big spreadsheets and only so much money. I've said figuratively at times to Representative Mack and others to say, imagine having a fifth column, that's assuming you have four, a fifth column where you actually have the return on investment that you know what you're spending, who's getting it, but it actually validates whether the program's having an impact. So from our industry, we want to add value to that discussion. Finally, the last piece you have in front of you is how we in Dakota have specifically implemented a return on investment methodology where we're holding our programs to a standard by which we can look at the program, we do the intervention, we costed out the whole value chain of the criminal justice system from city to county to state and community in what program, because the problem with this business is we got checkbooks across the whole continuum that pay for a service. So our investment, if you turn to the back page, this is actually what it fleshed out like. And if you look at this, on the bottom, if you look at the Dakota County, that does show we pay $800,000, and if you go two columns over, it's our honor to save the state of Minnesota $700,000 by the intervention of this program. But it starts to quantify the emotion that we have often about, well, counties are paying it and you're benefiting from it. Well, maybe that's fact, but let's quantify it if in fact it is the case. And then what's the return not only on what you pay, but to the lives of people these services are touching? And with that, Madam Chair and committee members, I'd entertain any questions.
Thank you. And before we take questions, Representative Mack, would you look at line 1.8 and let me know if the year 2014, are we really going to pay a year after the study is done, or did you want to change that to 2013 as well?
I would say it should be paid in this year. Mm-hmm. I'm just always wondering what your fiscal year is being projected as. Is that
right? All right. I understand that that will still work. So. Okay. The fiscal analyst has said that will still work the way it is. So
thank
we're
you,
fine
Madam
with
Chair.
That. But I apologize for interrupting. We do have a question from Representative Moran.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is really good, the initiative that you're bringing forth. And so my question is, you're asking us to invest $100,000 in this model and for the commissioner to go out and bring stakeholders in to create a model. And my thought is, you have a model here that you're saying works, and why would we spend $100,000 to, you know, to do this whole process when you have one in front of us?
Madam Chair, Representative Morin, my response to that would be, this works for the state of Washington, and I've also spoken to some commissioners and government appointees there, and they, in fact, do use this through the political process. It isn't the end-all, be-all. There are other models, and I think it's also good policy to say what is all out there, and then that MMB not being vested either way with the human services or the corrections or what we do there would actually make a recommendation, not only for the model, because you're right. I mean, there, to me, there's a lot of value, and I should mention behind, underneath just one of these lines I looked, there's a 90-page mathematical formulary they use to come up with this. So this is not for the faint of heart to figure this stuff out.
Thank you for not sharing that.
Yeah, you're welcome, Madam Chair. And let me also say, I think the other piece to that is the financial sustainability. For the sake of what does it cost? So this is a great idea, but what is the cost? And should that be bared solely on a tax dollar? But in fact, in the state of Washington, the legislature only pays a portion of the institute. They then take that seed money and go out and sell their capacities to the private, nonprofit, and other sectors as well. So I think both, this is a great model. I think there are also other models, but it's all up to you about whether I think, you know, that exhaustive research should be done first before Minnesota makes a decision.
Thank you so much. Are there other questions? Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just looking at this, where you have corrections programs as well, does not this not have to go to a public safety as well? I think it's a great idea, and really applaud you for bringing this forward. But because we've mixed sort of human services and public safety, it should probably go there, at least make a stop there.
And Representative, we have the committee administrator looking into that to see if that would be appropriate to send it there, and we'll let you know in just a moment, I think. Are there any other questions, which would be helpful if someone had one for just a moment while we get the answer? Representative McDonald, thank you for saving us.
Madam Chair, you're quite welcome. Question for the author. In having the commissioner of MMB develop the recommendations, would it be prudent for them to look at other states and see what they're doing with some of their programs and getting their return on investments and seeing if they can, are they getting, say, more bang for their buck with the rate of return on investments or not?
And Representative McDonald, before Representative Mack answers, we've done something very similar in the Department of Economic Development in the last several years, and it's taken them a long time, and I think they're still working on getting it right. But perhaps Representative Mack has other ideas. Representative Mack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative McDonald, you know, I'm thinking about different proposals that we see come in front of us, and a lot of times we'll have comparisons that whether testifiers bring to us or outside groups comparing how we do compared to other states. I think a lot of times we don't have the underlying assumptions of how those numbers are arrived at or if we're comparing apples and apples. And so I do think it's valuable to look at other states. I think what this would afford us is the expertise without a political agenda on either side or for an outcome to really inform us kind of just from that blank slate perspective of here's what you're investing, here's what you're getting for it, and so we can make better informed decisions. So certainly state-by-state comparison is good, and particularly like Washington, if there's other states out there that have programs like this in place, to take a look at that, and that's what the commissioner would be instructed to do under this bill. But getting something here in this state that hopefully all of us as legislators can come to really rely on and trust in that system, I think would be helpful as decision makers.
Thank you very much. And just one moment. Okay, so hang on. What we're going to do, Representative Mack, is there are no other questions. So we are going to ask you to move your bill and to move it to public safety and
policy and finance.
And because it's a policy and finance committee, we will still be able to make deadline there. And I think that will work. So if you would renew your motion and change it just a little bit for me.
Madam Chair, I will renew my motion that House File 404 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety, Finance, and Policy.
Yeah. That will work, and I believe because we're re-referring it, it will require a vote because we need to pass it out of this committee. So,
Madam Chair, I'm sorry.
Representative Dean.
Just to be clear on the deadline, could you clarify exactly how that would meet deadline, and if it does have to pass before, does it have to pass out of another committee before Friday at midnight in order for that to meet deadline, or is us referring it satisfying the policy requirement for first deadline?
We did send the committee administrator out in the hall to talk with folks, and we have been told that because it is a policy and finance deadline, that if it passes this committee and goes there, it still has met deadline and will have another week to be heard.
Okay, great. Thanks.
So we have a motion before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. Congratulations, Representative Mack. You're on to public safety. I think we're going to move ahead with the second Fisher bill. And so I'm just for expediency, I'm going to move House File 1088 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Fisher.
Thank you much, very much, Chair, Committee. This House File 1088 is to provide grants for money for DHS to use for grants for supportive housing for those with mental health issues. One of the things that I was sitting on the Housing and Finance Policy Committee is that we realized that we were having housing units setting up, helping address people who've got issues, but we didn't have the wraparound dollars to go with it. And so this is one of the attempts to try to help meet those needs that are out there. It has a blank dollar amount on it. We do not have a set dollar amount at this point in time, but we were figuring that might be something around the $1 million range. But at this point in time, we have it open. And once again, it will be done through grants through the Department of Health and Human Services. I do have several testifiers here, and I'd like to just move along and turn it over to them.
That would be wonderful, Representative Fisher. And who's your first testifier? Would you read your name into the microphone?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Sue Abderholden from NAMI, Minnesota. This grant program was part of the 2007 Mental Health Initiative, the bipartisan, effort to really improve the mental health system. It's been appropriated about $1.5 million a year. This last year in 2012, we funded 39 housing projects out of it and 770 people. It is a great program in that it collaborates with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency so that they're kind of helping with the rent issues, and we're really doing the additional services. This is not the things that you can bill for under ARMS or anything like that. These are kind of lower supports, if you will. So some of the examples would be they could have a tenant coordinator who really works with the person to make sure that they can stay in their apartment if they need help, keeping the upkeep or whatever. They can really watch for the changing needs of the individual, and if it looks like they may be headed towards a mental health crisis, to immediately bring in those services so that we maintain their health and their housing stability. There could be some life skills education as well. We do have projects all around the state, Minneapolis, Duluth, Bemidji, Detroit Lakes, Fond du Lac, White Earth, Apple Valley, St. Cloud, Red Wing, Mankato, I don't want to leave any of you out, Rochester, Washington County, Owatonna. So they really are throughout the state because, of course, people who have a serious mental illness live everywhere in the state and need help with housing. The one other thing I would just add is that you've heard me talk about recovery in the past, and it really is a home, a job, and a date on a Saturday night. And so making sure that people have stable housing is just critical in terms of their being able to get better and live in recovery.
Thank you so much. We have a few more testifiers, and we can just hold our questions till the end.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Julie Grothy. I'm with Guild Incorporated, which is a private, not-for-profit community mental health agency in the metropolitan area. We provide an array of recovery-focused community treatment and rehabilitation services for adults who have serious mental illness such as schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder, and bipolar disorders. I currently serve as Director of Delancey Services, which engages people who have histories of long-term homelessness which is also compounded by histories of mental illness, substance use, and trauma. Using a housing-first approach, these services assist participants to establish and maintain housing, to improve their health and their quality of life. Specifically, today I want to talk about Delancey Apartments. It's a collaboration between Guild Incorporated and Project for Pride and Living. Delancey Apartments opened in 2009. It provides 13 units of permanent supportive housing for people who've experienced chronic homelessness, who've also had great difficulty maintaining their housing and who have a mental illness. We target this particular segment of the population who have the greatest number of barriers. Those who have long-term histories of homelessness, 10, 15, 20 years on the street. They also experience other social complexities like lack of employment, poverty, trauma, traumatic brain injury, and they also often have legal barriers that prevent them from finding and keeping stable housing. Guild Incorporated offers integrated and coordinated services to these folks, supporting them to get off the streets, to find and keep a permanent, affordable place to live. We help them identify available resources to meet their needs for food, clothing, and personal items. We also help them access care for mental health, chemical health, and physical health needs. We work with them to explore and pursue work, school, or volunteer opportunities. And perhaps most importantly, we also help them to learn social and mediation skills, which are needed for them to work with landlords, to get along with neighbors, and to develop and maintain positive relationships. Allow me to share Lachey's story with you, and I actually have Lachey with me, so she'll talk too. When we first met her in 2009, she had experienced homelessness off and on for about 10 years. She also faced a number of legal issues, including aggressive panhandling charges. With our help and with HASAMI funding for staff, her life is now very different than it was in 2009. She's lived in stable housing since May of 2009, and this, by the way, was her very first apartment. With staff's help, she's recognized that the aggressive panhandling charges were likely symptomatic of a mental illness, and she has received a full diagnosis of bipolar disorder with psychotic features. We've been able to successfully engage her in a treatment plan, resulting in reduced episodes, and she's now staying out of legal trouble. She also has reconnected with family and looks forward to visits with her grandchildren in Madison, Wisconsin, and she's actually leaving Monday to go see them. So HASAMI funding helps us to target this segment of the population. It provides services tailored to their needs. It helps us to help them turn around long-term chronic homelessness, and it offers an additional level of support and security at this particular program. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My turn?
It's your turn.
Ms. Griffin?
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lachey, and I have lived at Delancey's Apartments for over 4 years. I was one of the first people to move in, and this is my first apartment. I grew up in Wisconsin. Sometimes I lived with my mother and sometimes in foster homes. I moved to Minnesota in 2000 with my partner. Then I became homeless. I had a hard time being homeless, living in the streets, sleeping outside on cold nights. I spent my days trying to keep warm, finding something to eat and take care of my partner. Homelessness is really hard. I wound up with rheumatoid arthritis, which I think I got from sleeping outside in the snow. I never want to experience that again. Carrying bags, getting put out of places, police coming to see if you are still alive when you are sleeping outside, panhandling, asking for money, and going to jail. It is really hard. Then I found out about Delancey Apartments from my outreach workers. I applied and was accepted. I moved in. Now my life is much better. I am not homeless. I have my own apartment. I have a safe place to go to sleep, and I can get up whenever I want to. I can eat when I want to and cook my own in my own kitchen. I can talk to staff when I want to, or when I need help for my medical stuff and sometimes for my voices. And the staff are good. I don't panhandle anymore, and I don't go to jail anymore. I see my psychiatrist and take my medication. I meet with my case manager, and Delancey is a really good place to live.
Thank you very much for sharing that. I have Dr. Tim Burkett. Yes.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Tim Burkett, CEO of People Incorporated, the largest provider of services to folks with mental illness in the state. And you've already heard some really good testimony about this bill. I just have a little bit to add. Funding for community mental health programming makes a real positive difference in the lives of every citizen in Minnesota. For purposes of illustration, I want to talk about two examples in addition to the one that we just heard. We provide a wide range of mental health services for folks with mental illness. First, we operate three crisis residences in Hennepin, Ramsey, and Anoka County. Last year, we served more than 2,500 people in these residences, and we helped them avoid hospitalization by staying short-term in an unlocked, home-like environment with nurturing and supported staff. Many of these clients we see over and over again, largely because they lack the community mental health support they need. Community support, which would help them avoid depending both on our area hospitals and People Incorporated's crisis residents every time when their mental health issues are becoming acute. This bill will help that immensely. Another example of the positive impact community-based mental health programming provides can be found by looking at People Incorporated's homeless outreach services, specifically our Housing First initiative. This program assists chronically homeless adults with mental illness in achieving their goals related to safety, stability, and recovery. Specifically, this means that we help these folks transition from homelessness to permanent housing. This work is done in stages, and supportive services are provided to our formerly homeless clients in their apartments as needed. Again, it's easy to see how this support can make a difference in the life of a homeless individual with mental illness. In fact, participants in our Housing First initiative move from an average of 75 homeless nights a year prior to the program to just 4 after the first year. As for the benefit to taxpayers in the community, our homeless outreach programming delivers a return on investment of several hundred thousand dollars every year via decreases in incarceration, hospitalization, and homeless shelter use. Before I finish, I'd like to share the words of one of our homeless clients with you. Ken Abner worked in food service and construction until becoming homeless, and he said I could use his name today, in 2008 when the economy started to go sour. He'd been homeless for 3 years when he met one of our outreach workers in 2011. He was able to move into our house in Ramsey County, deal with mental health issues, and transition into his own apartment where he's lived for the past year now. The program gave me a purpose again, Ken says. My apartment means my daughter can come stay with me again. They've helped me help myself. So thank you for all your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Dr. Burkett. And I think at this point, if anyone has questions for either the bill's author or any of the testifiers, this would be the time to get those questions answered. Seeing none, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I had a constituent that has adult foster care facility and has been involved in this for many years, and there has been some concern. I noticed this is about the funding. Can you let us know, or maybe staff, what is there still an issue about beds and licensing? There was some moratorium over some of these programs. This is just an opportunity to try and get some information, you know, related to this topic. And if no one does have that, maybe we could get it, staff could provide in regards to that, because I know there was some controversy in the past, and I've got people that are concerned about, you know, these community-based and the different housing options if we still have that moratorium or that license impact.
Representative Quam, we do have a different bill that's going to be dealing with that, I believe, coming up here in the next week or so, that will deal with exactly the issue you've raised. So I think we'll delve into that at another time. I think these are grants and slightly different population, different issue. But we definitely are going to deal with that in the very near future.
Thanks.
So thank you for raising that. Okay, seeing no other questions, I move this bill, I believe. So I would like to renew my motion that House File 1088 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And I thank you all for your testimony. It was nicely done. Thank you. The last bill we have is Representative Abler's, and he has not yet stepped in the room. And so Representative Allen has agreed, as one of the authors on the bill, to step forward and if Representative Abler comes in, we'll send him up to the table as well. So I'll move House File 619 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and I believe there is an author's amendment.
Madam Chair, yes, there's an A1 amendment. The amendment states that the changes in this bill are effective either July 1st, 2013, or upon federal approval, whichever comes first.
Are there any questions about the A1? All those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying... I'll move the A1 amendment to be for approval, and all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the A1 amendment has been added to House File 619. And Representative Allen, if you would like to proceed and bring any testifiers forward that you have.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. This bill will allow separate payment for mental health or dental services provided on the same day as other services provided to MA and Minnesota Care enrollees that are furnished by the same provider. In other words, this bill would allow an encounter for mental health services to be paid on the same day as an encounter for a different medical or dental service at a federally funded qualified health center and federal lookalikes. And I'll have a testifier to explain that. So
thank you very much.
Mr. Watson is here, Madam Chair.
Mr. Watson.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jonathan Watson. I am with the Minnesota Association of Community Health Centers. We represent the state's 17 federally qualified health centers that serve roughly 185,000 low-income individuals. One of the beauties of the community health center model is that it is that one-stop shopping experience for the low-income folks that we serve. We offer medical, primary care, medical, mental health, and dental services all underneath one roof. With regards to mental health services, we employ roughly 53 FTE, and we use a combination of psychiatrists, licensed clinical psychologists, and licensed clinical social workers. And we provided about 70,000 medical encounters or mental health encounters last year to roughly 14,000 individuals. The current Medicaid policy for reimbursement really runs counter to what we think are best practices in the marketplace, and that is namely integrating mental health and medical care, integrating those for our patients. What the background of the problem is essentially is a patient comes into a community health center on the medical side of the business. The provider senses that there's a mental health issue, and given that we have these services all underneath one roof, we can provide that warm handoff by saying, go down the hall, and there's a mental health provider there that can assess and meet your needs. Right now, that secondary visit is not reimbursed by Medicaid. So essentially what we're doing is that is uncompensated care for the community health center. We're providing, drawing upon our resources devoted to the uninsured, which is 40% of our business, providing, using those resources to serve a Medicaid patient. So what this bill is asking to do is have that second encounter be reimbursed from the Medicaid program. 26 other states do this throughout the nation, so we want to join that, and it's right to do by our patients to integrate this behavioral health care. We could ask that patient to come back the next day, but that's probably not the right thing to do. But with me today, I have two experts from the Community University Healthcare Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I have Dr. Chris Reif and Dr. Mathuri Shores, who want to just testify a little bit and give you some front lines experience of this phenomenon that occurs at the health centers.
Thank you so much. And I'm quickly looking over the fiscal note because one of the cost savings that I know Representative McDonald and I both probably would identify is non-emergency medical transportation for these individuals. Would they come back day after day after day? Because those would be separate transportation expenses for a client. That so there may be some cost savings, and I actually don't see that in the fiscal note.
Right.
So thank you for that, and if your two presenters would like to come to the podium and speak your name into the microphone and give your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
Good morning, members. Thank you for inviting me to your conference today. My name is Dr. Chris Reif, and I'm the medical half of the team. Dr. Shores is the psychiatric half of the team. And I am a family practice doctor and also the medical director for Krug Clinic, which is an FQHC in South Minneapolis in the Phillips neighborhood. And as at any of the community clinics, I see a lot of patients who have rather complex medical problems and psychiatric problems. But especially so at Krug, because we have the good psychiatric services there, which I have to say many of my family medicine colleagues would like to have also, because I can see my complex patients, and when I run into a psychiatric problem that I don't know what to do with, I can refer them to Dr. Shores or one of our other psychiatrists. An example of that came up on Monday when I was seeing a young woman for a pre-op physical for some surgery that she needed, and when I asked her if she smoked cigarettes, she started crying. And the reason she was crying is she had stopped, but she started again in January when, after the suicide of her younger brother, kind of put her into a tailspin and put the family in a lot of stress. She said it was quite unbearable. She couldn't sleep at night, and I knew immediately that I needed some specialty care and help, and I was able to get our triage nurse to find an appointment with our psychiatrist that day. Yesterday, another example, there was a Dr. Code Blue that was called at our clinic because one of our psychiatric patients, when being registered for his visit with his psychiatrist, complained of some heavy pressure in his chest and trouble breathing, and we all got nervous, and so we called the emergency team. And after I went there and assessed him and realized that it was actually probably his anxiety problems and not his heart, he was relieved, I was relieved, and he's able to go forward and see a psychiatrist and be taken care of. So there was a good ending to that story. Every week we have about 175 psychiatric visits to our clinic. We do vital signs, we check heart rate, we check blood pressure, and we run into a fair number of patients who have blood pressure problems, some of them dangerous. When that happens, we're able to get their blood pressure down, get them stabilized, start a treatment plan, while at the same time allowing them to continue with their psychiatric visits, so we're essentially taking care of both needs on the same day, which we think is the best care, and actually as doctors and as clinicians, we're always going to do. The way it happens now, unfortunately, it's at a disadvantage to our finances and ends up costing us money and taking money that we could use for other services. So it would really help us if the financing that supports our comprehensive care followed and we could bill for both medical and psychiatric visits on the same day. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for this opportunity to testify today. My name is Madhuri Shores. I'm a psychiatrist at the Community University Healthcare Center. Our clinic cares for individuals with very complex psychiatric illnesses. My patients include both English and non-English speaking, Hmong, Somali, Vietnamese, Cambodian, and African American and Caucasian patients, adults of all ages. Their psychiatric diagnoses span major depression to bipolar illness to schizophrenia. Many are homeless with little or no family support. Many have low incomes and struggle to find transportation to the clinic. My patients also often have complex medical problems, and because of both their psychiatric symptoms and their challenging lives, they struggle to take care of their physical health. We know that people with severe persistent mental illness die at least 10 years earlier than the general population due to poorly managed medical illnesses. Last week, I saw a middle-aged man with schizophrenia who hears voices and has paranoid delusions. We found his blood pressure much higher than usual. We got him over to medical care right away, and his blood pressure was stabilized. Medication adjustments were made. This was the right clinical decision. Had we let this patient go in the hopes he would return the next day for a medical appointment, he might have ended up in the hospital with a stroke. Also last week, I saw a 40-year-old mother of five children who recently got out of an abusive marriage. Since then, she and her children have been living in a shelter. She's barely been sleeping. She came in to see her primary care doctor for migraines and diabetes. She shared with him that she was feeling hopeless and depressed with thoughts to end her life. The doctor arranged for the patient to come down the hall for a psychiatric evaluation with me the same day. I also found she was having post-traumatic stress symptoms. We put in place a treatment plan and a safety plan. We likely avoided an ER visit and possible hospitalization. In my opinion, this was the right clinical action for the patient and her children. Both examples illustrate that when medically necessary, same-day referrals are essential to high-quality clinical care and limit strain on our patients' already strained lives. At our clinic, we strive to provide optimal medical and mental health care to all patients, regardless of their ability to pay. Consequently, I urge this committee to approve this legislation before you today. Be glad to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Members, we can take questions now, and I understand there might be an oral amendment to this bill, and then Representative Allen and or Abler, now that he's there, could make some closing comments. So would you like to move the amendment first, or the oral amendment, or do you want to, we had the testifiers, or do you want to take any questions?
We did the
eight.
Oh, what's the oral amendment? Oh, did we delete section two yet?
No.
Okay, Madam Chair, I'd like to move to delete section two, although I really like that part of the bill. I won't go on to that little rant about these people were actually, I will do a little rant. We designed healthcare homes about the services that the FQHCs provide. Curiously enough, they don't qualify to be healthcare home without doing a lot of work. And so they should just be deemed, Madam Chair. But short of that, I move to delete section two.
Any questions? Okay, we have a motion to delete section two. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries. We now have before us section one of the bill with the amendment that was made, and it is your last opportunity to ask any questions, and then Representative Abler can make some closing comments.
And Madam Chair, thanks to Representative Allen for being my second author and on this really important project. She did
very well by you, Representative Abler.
Yeah, probably better than me, so I'll quit talking. But I just wanted to point out the fiscal note. It's the DHS did some better sharp pencil work, and I think last year or 2 years ago, it was a very high number. This is a more bearable number. I'll have to try to persuade Representative. It's actually chicken feed for what the value it's going to be and a high-quality return on investment. This also does not include the savings on special transportation.
I pointed that out, Representative Abler.
Thanks. Never mind, and I will stop. But any penny that goes into these places gets well spent, and it's a good investment. Thank you for your support.
Absolutely. And it looks like we have a question from Representative Newton.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Abler. On the effective date, the amendment change, it says, or upon federal approval, whichever is later. Is it you wanted it later or sooner?
That's a technical question, and maybe staff can help me tell me why I want that.
Madam Chair, it has to be later because the feds have to approve this in the rates. So if we made it effective earlier, it would have no effect if the feds haven't approved the rates.
Madam Chair, that's why I wanted it that way.
Thank you. Representative Newton, you still have a curious look on your face.
Well, it just, it's effective the 1st of July, 2013. What if the feds don't approve it by July, 2013?
Madam Chair, Representative Newton, then under the amendment that went on, it would go into effect when the federal government approved the rates are anticipated under it.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair,
Representative
the fiscal note on page 6 presumes January 1st, 2014 in their math. So they just guessed, too. It's an estimate.
Okay, we have one more question or comment. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, just a comment. We've heard a lot of good testimony on bills here. It's just an observation. Especially was touched by the homeless testimony today, and all the good intentions of helping people like that. But my observation is I sure hope somewhere in this legislative session we're doing something to help the private sector grow and prosper, such as mining, manufacturing, and farming. By lowering taxes, having reasonable regulations, they will grow and prosper and generate the tax money we need to do these well-intended programs. If we punish the private sector, then we're not going to have the money we need in order to do these programs. And I just throw that out for food for thought, okay?
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. I don't see anyone else's name on the list, so we're going to renew my motion that House File 619 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
That was a nice presentation and good testimony. And I just, before we go today, I want to clarify that we've laid over House File 619, House File 524, and House File 1088 for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Service Finance Omnibus Bill. House File 404, Representative Mack's bill, was referred to another committee, but we still have the option of including that here as well in our omnibus bill. So I just wanted to make that point as well. So thank you all. There is no meeting tomorrow, and the meeting is adjourned for today.